Welcome to The Grill Room. On the menu this week, all the latest news, views, and opinions from the world of professional golf. Your maitre d's are Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli, two friends who rarely agree on anything. You can count on them to give you both sides of the story, whether you want it or not. So come on in, have a seat, and remember, anything that comes from the grill room is definitely on our tab. And remember, keep your applause to a mild clap, all right? After all, we're talking golf here.
From the Open Championship to the RBC Canadian Open, hi, I'm Bob Bubka, here in the grill room with yours truly, Alex Maselli. Well, first off, Alex, let's begin. How was your trip back from the Open? Because I'm going to tell you a horror story when I hear how your trip back was.
Well, mine was fine, so let's hear yours.
All right. How about this? Leave the media room at St. Andrews roughly 11 o'clock at night, a little over a two and a half hour drive to the Aberdeen area because we're flying out of Aberdeen in the morning. Get to a hotel, basically take a shower, get up for a 6 a.m. flight. Left the hotel about 3:30 in the morning. 6 a.m. flight down to Heathrow. And I'm going to give a travel tip to people listening. If you can avoid Heathrow on any of your trips, please avoid it. It is unbelievable.
Well, wait a second. How often have you traveled to the UK?
many times.
And it took you this long to figure out that you're supposed to avoid Heathrow?
No. Let me explain something, Alex. We hadn't used Heathrow in a while, so you forget just how bad it is. But you land at Heathrow, we had to take a bus. We take a bus that takes us to a terminal. Then we had to take a bus that takes us to our terminal. Then we have to walk maybe 3 miles to get to our gate where we fly. And so we go Heathrow. Where do we go? Heathrow to JFK. Then we had to take a taxi cab to LaGuardia because our flight originates out of LaGuardia. We fly to Charlotte. But, of course, we sit on the runway at LaGuardia, Alex, for almost 2 hours. All right, then down to Charlotte. Flight delayed there. Get on that flight sometime after 10 o'clock. Bottom line, get back to the house about 2:30 in the morning. Let's see, that's Wednesday morning, and we left Monday night. So that is a lot of traveling. But the worst part, obviously, Heathrow, and judging by your comments, you know to avoid Heathrow at all costs.
Well, I do. I think also, you know, if you it's one thing to fly in and out of Heathrow and not transfer. The transfer is what gets you. That's the bottom line, because you walk all over the place. It's pretty screwy. However, I will tell you that you've been to Newark before, I'm sure, Newark Airport. And when I arrived at Newark Airport, they have a train that takes you from different terminals. The train wasn't working. And so you get, you know, you come through customs, and then you're supposed to transfer your luggage. You know, you give it to the whoever. And my flight was a little after 5, and it was like 3 o'clock. And there's this guy from United walking around saying, if your flight's after 5 o'clock, take your luggage and walk out to the bus. And I'm like, I'm not walking anywhere with golf clubs, bag. I got 4 things. I'm not walking anywhere with anything. And then he looks and says, oh, well, you got enough stuff. I didn't even ask. He goes, you got enough stuff. You don't have to do it. And then he's telling these other people. Well, these people, as you know, a lot of them come from foreign countries. They hadn't even been there before. They roll into Newark, and this guy's telling them, just go take your bags and go over to the bus. Go over to the bus? What bus? So you get out there, and you have to take a bus to your terminal, and of course, it's completely screwed up because this is not the normal procedure, so no one knows what's going on. So the woman will say, stand over here, and it's a bus for the parking lot, and then you see your bus for Terminal C, and you walk over to your bus for Terminal C, and then all of a sudden the parking lot bus goes, and then the Terminal C bus starts moving, and you look at the guy, he goes, well, you're supposed to be over there. I go, how the hell am I supposed to be over there when it says parking bus? I mean, it was just a nightmare. However, I didn't have the problems you had. But I think this is just a systemic problem in traveling. Traveling today, They make airports not to, for the concern of the people that are actually using them. They just make airports willy-nilly however they want to. And, you know, the bottom line is if you look on your ticket and how much you pay in taxes and fees and everything else, you put a nice little chunk into either the TSA's pocket or that airport's pocket, and they don't care about you at all.
No, you're right about that. And Janice and I were lamenting that, you know, when we started in this business, and when you started too, Alex, flying was somewhat of a luxury. People really almost got dressed up. It was almost a tie and jacket scenario. But it, you look forward to it. You got a nice meal served. And now, on our flight from Heathrow to JFK, I mean, they were able to serve the meal in about 10 minutes because all I do is throw this little box at you, you know, pasta or chicken, but, you know, boom. But anyhow, that being said, just, you know, be cautious, listeners. When you're planning your travel, maybe not go to the biggest airport. Maybe a little drive, in a car to get you where you're going. You might better well be served doing it that way. You'll save a little money and probably will not be as crowded. Speaking of crowded, though, Alex, we got a jam-packed show. We got to talk about so many things that came so close in Canada. They've been waiting 61 years. Well, they're going to have to wait a little longer. The young sensation, Lexi, she waited long enough to finally get her first win this year. Not nearly as long as Marco, and I'm not talking about Marco Polo, but a Marco finally gets the job done, and he did it in fine fashion in one of the senior majors. So lots of great golf to talk about, and when we come back, that's exactly what we're going to be doing.
The Grill Room is proud to be doing our part to entertain the active men and women in our military, but also the veterans as part of the Armed Forces Radio Network.
And unless we forget later on, guess what? Jordan Spieth, 22 years old today. Can you imagine, Alex, celebrating your 22nd birthday? You've already earned on the golf course in excess of $18 million, I think now, or $17 million, somewhere around that. Probably made considerably more than that with your endorsements. You've won two majors. Your future's bright, and you're celebrating your 22nd birthday. Happy birthday, Jordan Spieth. You have had a remarkable 22 years. If your next 22 or anything like your last 22, you're in for quite a ride. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfBlot.com. Heard on TuneIn Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network. We'll fire up the jets and go around the world of golf when we return.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Open champion Zach Johnson agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Well, the jets are airborne. Time now to land on our first destination, and that will be the European Tour. And Alex, Danny Willett made a lot of noise at the Open Championship at St. Andrews, but didn't get the job done there, but certainly recovered nicely this past week.
You know, I think it's interesting, Bob, that guys that played well at the Open Championship, if you look at the leaderboard and then you look what they did the next week, You got Danny Willett, played well, didn't get it done, as you said. Closing round 65, bogey free. After shooting 71, I think, in the third round, letting actually Matthew Fitzpatrick into the tournament. It just shows you that, you know, sometimes when you are playing well, it kind of continues. That's the case for Danny Willett. Actually, Matthew Fitzpatrick is kind of funny, too, because he's not been playing great, but I know he's been working really hard. When I went to the Scottish Open the week before the Open Championship, I was there on Monday. And, you know, Monday's not necessarily a big day at any golf tournament. And it was probably 8:30 in the morning, and who's on the putting green working on chipping and putting but Matthew Fitzpatrick. And we talked a little while, and, you know, he's trying to get a handle on it, get a feel for, you know, playing professional golf. He's not the biggest kid in the world. He's probably the same height as Ricky Fowler, but and probably even a little thinner than Ricky. Hits the ball well, has a great short game, but, you know, it takes time to break through. And so you got Matthew Fitzpatrick shooting 66 in the final round, losing by a shot to Danny Willett, both playing very, very well. Both, as I think you'll indicate later, is part of ISM, which is Chubby Chandler's group. But, you know, it's just one of these things where I think if you played well last week, there was a lot of guys that played well the following week, which we're going to get into Jason Day as well in Canada. Jim Furyk was up there. Matt Kuchar was up there. All these guys that played well the week before.
Absolutely. And, well, sometimes Monday's a big day at a tournament. I mean, Monday certainly was a big day at St. Andrews due to the weather delays. Just teasing you, Alex. But anyway, Danny Willett, he didn't tease anybody but the entire field. He tells us he was very happy with that victory.
You know, played some good golf today. Fitzy was right there all the time, obviously leading up until 11. But yeah, I mean, just delighted. A lot of nerves going on. Obviously, it's always tough winning. And yeah, just a great day.
Tough winning. I think it's tougher to lose. But anyway, congratulations to Danny Willett. Now we'll move on to the Champions Tour. Certainly a surprise winner with the likes of Colin Montgomery, Bernhard Langer in that last threesome of the day. And unheralded, Marco Dawson was able to come out on top. What a win for Marco, Al.
Well, I mean, if you had to guess who would have won that tournament going in, I don't think you could have guessed Marco Dawson in the top 50. There's just no way. And, you know, playing at Sunnydale, which is just a terrific place. But as you said, in the final pairing or final grouping with Bernhard Langer, who has had a tremendous, not only career, but tremendous last 24 or 12 months. And Colin Montgomery, same thing. And you beat both those guys and you beat them down the stretch. I mean, he was not leading going into the final nine. And then I think he bogeyed 10. I can't remember what happened there, but it just tremendous. And, you know, there's a guy that never won on the PGA Tour. It has been, he's clearly the definition of a journeyman. And now not only does he win his first major championship of his career, but his second time on the Champions Tour, playing very, very well. And I think he said, you know, how much the confidence of winning back on the Champions Tour earlier this year in Tucson gave him to play well this week and actually weeks after that as well. So I think, you know, we can talk about how hard you work and everything else, but the bottom line is if you don't have any validation, if you don't start seeing scores getting posted and starting to play better and bigger paychecks, it's very, very hard to continue that process. And now you got Marco Dawson, who's got two wins, probably can't be any more confident than he is right now. So it'd be interesting to see what he does the rest of what is, not much of a season left on the Champions Tour.
Well, it was pretty amazing. 431 starts on the PGA Tour without tasting victory, and actually put the blame on the fact that he played too conservatively. He played scared when he was on the PGA Tour. He didn't free himself up and have fun. He's certainly having fun now, and he tells our Grill Room listeners how much hard work pays off.
It means that, you know, most of the work that you put in, this the life and blood that you put into all the work that goes through the years comes to fruition in a tournament like this. It's just this unbelievable. You know, I can't tell you how many hours I put out on the range, and I've had two back surgeries to prove it. So I've spent a lot of time on the range and on the putting green over the years. And you know, it's a little later than most of the guys, but it came true. And you know, when I got to this point 2 days ago and I had a good first round and a good second, I thought, okay, you know, maybe this is going to happen again. We'll just keep on making the swings and try and make the putts. And you know, that's what it comes down to. I just made one more putt than Bernhard.
And that putt he made certainly was dynamic. Made about a 20-footer on the 72nd hole, and he was one happy camper. What happened on the LPGA Tour, Alex?
You know, Lexi Thompson came from behind and won. She, as you said earlier in the show, she hadn't won this year, which is kind of surprising because she had such a great year last year. But it is her fifth career win, and she's jumping on. She had to jump on a plane just like a lot of the players at the Meyer LPGA Classic presented by Kraft to get to Turnberry, which is not an easy place to get to either. And to play in the Ricoh's Women's British Open. I noticed in a tweet this morning, Bob, that Stacey Lewis got there with no problem, except for her clubs didn't get there. So she's showing up on a Monday without her clubs, and I'm sure she won't be the first one. There seems to be a lot of problems with people not getting their clubs this year, players on all the tours. But Lexi Thompson winning, it's got to be a big boost. Because, again, she's struggled to win this year, probably not understanding why. Now she gets it done, and she gets a turn into she's going to make the turn now in Scotland, which I think she's got an excellent chance because I think it's a good golf course for her.
Yeah, with her tremendous length. And I think the weather, if it turns sour like it's, you know, on occasion, accustomed to do when you're in Scotland.
Bob, it's Monday. It's already started raining there.
Well, they want to make sure the rain gets there on time. But here's an interesting stat that blows my mind. If I said to you, who's won more, Lexi Thompson or Jason Day? Probably our average grill room listener might say, well, of course, Jason Day. Well, not the case. Jason Day winning the Canadian Open, Alex, but he only wins. That's only his fourth win on the PGA Tour. And before we get to that, I want our Grillroom listeners to hear a little bit of what Lexi Thompson had to say after her victory.
It feels amazing. It still hasn't really hit me yet because everything happens so fast. But it was a great day out there. And well, really, the whole day, I was just trying to play my own game. I actually said when I was on, I think, 10, my goal was to get it to 20 under. I didn't get it up to that, but I was just trying to focus on my own game, focus on doing my pre-shot routine and having fun in between shots, and I think that's what helped me shoot 6 under today.
You know, Lexi, Alex, just a tremendous talent and an outstanding young lady. We've had the pleasure of meeting with her on a couple of different occasions, and you know, she just strikes me as the average American girl that just has a tremendous ability to play this game of golf.
Well, she does, and I think the thing that we lose sight of is, you know, we've talked about all the young guys coming up on the PGA Tour. Well, it's the same thing on the LPGA Tour. Lexi Thompson is very young. You know, we forget about how young she was when she was trying to get out on this tour. And there's a lot of other young ladies too that are. They're so young, and they're still teenagers. So Lexi Thompson has not been playing that long on the LPGA Tour, and now she's got 5 wins. So I think she's in good shape. And it's important, too, if you're Julie Inkster to start seeing Americans playing well, because you got a Solheim Cup to try to take care of, and not too long away now. We're already near the end of July. So in about a couple months, you're going to be at a Solheim Cup, and you need these American players to be playing well, and you're hoping that people like Michelle Wee will be healthy, and you're hoping that people like Lexi Thompson are going to have their game in check when they get there.
You know what's amazing about the LPGA Tour, though, Alex? You know, you can close your eyes and just flash back. Wow, we're talking about Inbee Park. Maybe she's never going to lose another event. Oh, wait a minute. Here comes Lydia Ko. She might not ever lose another event. And you know, so for Lexi Thompson to have won 5 times with the depth of the talent pool on the LPGA is pretty remarkable. And I'm glad you mentioned that Solheim Cup. That's going to be interesting. Julie Engstra, I think, is going to be an amazing captain. And that certainly will be upon us before we realize it. And upon us now, the RBC Canadian Open. And Jason Day, talk about redemption. I mean, he has a putt at St. Andrews that we all witnessed, Alex, that he leaves short on the 72nd hole that would have gotten him into the playoff, making it a four-man playoff, was almost gutted by the fact that he left it short, the emotion that he showed. And what does he do? You know, less than a week later, he's up in Canada at the RBC at you know, where they play, Glen Abbey, one of the great golf courses in Canada, designed by Jack Nicklaus. And by the way, every time I think about the Canadian Open, I think about the fact that Jack Nicklaus never won the Canadian Open, finished second there six times. And I was putting it together. Phil Mickelson, six times second in the U.S. Open. Jack Nicklaus, six times second in the Canadian Open. 12 second place finishes in those big events between those two guys, and not a victory. Just one of the oddities about the world of golf, but no oddity for Jason Day. You alluded to it earlier. Really a bounce back for Jason Day after the frustration, disappointment of what happened at St. Andrews, for him to come through and fly in colors with that birdie on the 72nd hole. Really remarkable stuff for Jason.
Well, I think, you know, again, you mentioned it. It's hard to believe that he has one less win than Lexi Thompson, but this tour is very competitive. And I think you mentioned Marco Dawson and how he did things that he wishes he would have had the chance to do over again on the PGA Tour. Didn't free himself up, wasn't as aggressive, played scared. I think Jason Day, in some way, shape, or form, was like that at the beginning. You know, you have to kind of find your way out here. You have to learn how to play on the PGA Tour. I looked at David Hearn on the 72nd hole at Canada, and he's got a chance to make an eagle to tie Jason Day. Well, David Hearn has played well 2 weeks before. I mean, I think he finished in the top five, but this is a big deal. He needs to try to make this eagle putt. But at the same time, David Hearn is a name that we don't know much about. Has not made a tremendous amount of money on the PGA Tour. So if he gets too aggressive, now he's going to take himself out of a tie for second place, most likely, and put himself into a tie for like fifth or sixth. And that's the things that you run into as you're going along. Unfortunately, David Hearn ended up parring the hole instead of bearding the hole. He didn't finish tied with Bubba Watson for second. And, you know, these are the things that people don't understand when you're sitting there saying, oh, you know, why didn't he do this or why didn't he do that? Well, it's a learning process. And I think Jason Day has finally learned. Second win on the PGA Tour this year after winning in San Diego, winning in a playoff in San Diego. Didn't put it in a playoff this time, drilling a 20-footer that, you know, the TV people were saying, the announcers were saying was not an easy putt. And yet he still made it. What I thought was interesting, though, Bob, outside of his make, was how Bubba Watson had driver 8-iron into the par 5, 8-iron from 197, which only tells you how juiced he was in regards to how much adrenaline he had going to hit an 8-iron 197. Oh, and by the way, went right over the flag stick and didn't land and checked and went right into the rough behind the flag stick. I mean, Bubba Watson can't believe to this day that he hit an 8-iron that far. But that, again, just shows you the talent level of these guys.
Oh, you bring a chuckle to me, Alex. Bubba Watson can't remember it to this day. It's only been 24 hours, so I'm sure he'll get over it. But you're right. He was juiced. What a drive. You know, I mean, he drove it 386 yards on the previous hole. I mean, it just brings up that argument, you know, again and again. Do we have to roll back this golf ball? I mean, we can't have guys driving at 386, and we can't have guys hitting 8-irons 195 yards. That's the position I'm taking. I don't know what position. How do you feel about it?
You know what, Bob? He drove it that far. hit 8-iron, and he still didn't make eagle, which is what he was trying to do. He only made a par, or a birdie, rather. Point being is that it's not like you can just do whatever you want because you can hit it hard. Bubba Watson at times will hit it hard, and it'll go on another planet. So, I mean, you still have to learn how to play the game. You still have to make the shots. You still have to execute. You still have to make the putts. It hasn't changed in that way. Yes, you're not going to see the ball moving as much as you used to, right to left, left to right, unless you're watching Bubba Watson, who purposely takes a ball that is built not to move right to left and left to right and moves it right to left and left to right. So, I mean, everybody's different. I think that I like watching what it used to be like. I agree with you. At the same time, I used to like watching tennis when they were playing wood rackets. That ain't going to happen again either.
Well, they did slow the ball down in tennis to make it far more exciting than, you know, if you have a lightning fast ball, the points are over real fast. But I want to get back to a point you made, and I think it's an excellent one, and I don't think maybe our average listener not fully aware of. When you brought up David Hearn and going into that last hole, yes, he'd like to win. Yes, he'd love to end that 61-year drought of you know, a Canadian winning the Canadian Open. But money is a factor. Until you reach a certain plateau on the PGA Tour, I would say Jason Day is not out there worried about money. Bubba Watson's not out there worried about money. But David Hearn probably is. And, you know, if you go back and you watch players that get in a critical situation, it's impossible for them not to think about, you know, the ramifications of a bad shot, trying to be too aggressive. You know, when you have money concerns, it kind of restrains you a little bit on you know, going for that heroic shot.
Well, when was it, and it's a long time ago, but was it Corey Pavin that decided to lay up at a par 5 at Augusta?
No, that was Chip Beck.
Chip Beck, I'm sorry, thank you. But, I mean, people questioned that for the longest time, and you have to wonder exactly what the motivation was behind that. And, you know, when you looked at the Open Championship on Sunday and you saw the guys come down the stretch, it was a litany of guys that didn't have to worry about money. I mean, even Jordan Spieth, at the age that he's at now, he's not looking for his status is set. I mean, he's won two majors. He doesn't have to worry about his card. I mean, it's a progression. I mean, when Jordan Spieth came out, he didn't even make it through Q school. He was using exemptions to get on the PGA Tour, earned enough of money on exemptions to be able to get, the exemption throughout the season. Got that. Then he turns around and wins. Then he gets on the President's Cup. Then he starts winning again. Then he starts winning majors. It's a progression for him, but it was a quick progression. David Hearn has not won on the PGA Tour. David Hearn is trying to keep his card sometimes. David Hearn is trying to get in the FedEx Cup. David Hearn is trying to do a lot of things, which a lot of those guys have already done, and that makes a difference, and it's hard. And until you can get to that point, I don't think you're going to be able to play your best golf.
No, you're right about that, Alex. And one other thing David Hearn certainly had on the back of his mind, he's trying to make the President's Cup team. And, you know, whether you finish second, you get X amount of points. You finish fifth, sixth, seventh, you get considerably less points. So that had to be a factor for David Hearn. But congratulations to Canadians in the top seven. Adam Hadwin finished the seventh. So, you know, David Hearn, pretty good now. Money-wise, though, Alex, made $1,735,000 so far this year. But before we move away from the Canadian Open, I want to hear from...
You know, not being able to get into the playoff really kind of... It was disappointing. It was frustrating and disappointing at the same time. And even though I knew that I played great, I knew that this week was, I had to focus on this week. As soon as that finished, I had to focus on this week. So when I actually had the same putt, it was a very similar putt on the 72nd hole today. You know, same things were going through my mind. Make sure you get it to the hole. And fortunately enough for me, it was quick enough to where I just needed to get it on the line. As if I got line, it was perfect, and I just knew as soon as I hit the putt about 6 feet out, I just knew that I was going to come back and go on the hole. And this is why we practice, this is why we work so hard, and you know, put the hours in, not only on the golf course but off the golf course with the body in mind, and just to have this one little moment where you can somehow just freeze it, and on top of it to be the Canadian Open champion, it's no better feeling. I mean, it's just amazing, and I'm so happy to be the champion.
All right, Jason Day is telling us exactly how important that victory was. By the way, second child coming into the Day family in a few months. His wife, Ellie, was in attendance. They already have a little boy named Dash. We wish them luck on their second child. We also wish a lot of luck Ollie Schneiderjohns. He turned professional after the Open Championship, and automatically, you know, not automatically, but he did get an exemption into the RBC Canadian Open, made his professional debut, very respectable, at tied for 22nd, did shoot 9 under par. Well,
you know, Bob, he had a chance after Saturday. He played really well on Saturday, third round, to get himself in position, and just didn't get it done, but he's going to have another chance this week, I believe. He got an exemption in the Tigers event at Quicken Loans, and so he'll be playing his second PGA Tour event as a professional starting this week.
Well, it was pretty good reason for him to turn professional. He made the cut at Chambers Bay, and then made the cut at St. Andrews. Figured, hey, enough of this play for fun. Let's play for pay. And off to a good start. We're off to news and notes. That's up next. You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfBlot.com. Heard on TuneIn Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network. 144 countries, 77 ships at sea.
The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to the Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Ricky Fowler agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Make Coolbrella the next purchase for your golf bag. The Coolbrella is instant portable shade. It's an umbrella that reflects the sun, offering portable, effective protection from the sun. Whether playing or spectating, the Coolbrella protects from the harsh rays of the sun while providing a cool, comfortable shade. For more information on the perfect gift for you or any golfer, log on to Coolbrella.com. That's Coolbrella.com. Coolbrella, instant shade and all-weather comfort.
Welcome back to the Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Ah, we're back. News and notes music. Bob Bubka, Alex Maselli. Junior Amateur, Junior Girls Championships. Both big, big events on the USGA schedule this week. Bob, we talked about it before when we talked about Lexi Thompson. We talked about all the young kids coming up and how well they're playing. And now you got a 15-year-old girl from Korea, and I'm going to butcher her poor name, Yoon Young Jung or Jung. That's about the best I can do. I'm sure you could do better, Bob, but I'm not putting you through it. 15 years old, wins the U.S. Junior Girls Championship. You know, what's surprising about this is when you were 15 years old, Bob, I mean, Jack Nicklaus at 15 years old wasn't winning junior championships, was he?
Absolutely. I mean, age now is just incredible. But Seong didn't come out of nowhere. She was did win the 2014 Public Links Women's Amateur. Oh, no, she was runner-up.
She was runner-up.
Runner-up. Yeah. Well, not bad for 14.
You don't think?
But anyway, wow. I'll tell you what was hard to watch was that U.S. Junior Amateur, Philip Barbary from Shreveport, Louisiana. And you can Orshak, yeah, he defeated Andrew Orshak. Now on the surface, that doesn't sound like a big deal, except Orshak was five up with six holes to go, and he was playing in his home state. He had, you know, a huge gallery out there for a junior am. 99% were following him, and Barbary somehow doesn't quit, Alex. Just gets it to four down, three down, two down, one down, then goes into sudden death on the 37th hole. He comes away, Barbary, with the victory. Pretty impressive stuff. He was the 28th seed going in, so he certainly wasn't the favorite.
You know, I think what's interesting, and you know, match play is so much different than stroke play, but once it starts going in the other direction, the guy who's making it go in the other direction gets so much momentum so easily, and the guy that's trying to fend him off, it feels like there's no way he can win a hole, and it just continues to pile on. And, you know, I mean, it's not like Barbary was Tiger Woods, but to Orshak, he had to at some point seem to be, as his five-hole lead shrunk to nothing and they had to go to a playoff. All right, outside of the juniors, Bobby, the USGA, in what will be known as the worst-kept secret in golf, named three sites for their U.S. Open championships. The 2022 site, which will be the Country Club in Brookline. They have not been back there for a long, long time. The 2023 site, the LACC, Los Angeles Country Club. And then the 2024 site, which we all know very well now, was Pinehurst Resort and Country Club, which will be the number two course. I don't care about the Pinehurst part, but I really want to talk about the Country Club and LACC. I don't think we've been to the Country Club since when? I mean, are we talking about, well, we hadn't been there
since. I think
since
when we met one, didn't we?
Yeah.
1913.
We hadn't been there since the Ryder Cup. There was a U.S. Amateur there, which I attended a couple years ago, but we haven't been there for a U.S. Open, I think, since, was it Curtis Strange? Is that how far back we're going now?
Absolutely, and that was in the late 80s.
You know, so why we're going back to the Country Club is, A, they saw what it would be like playing the U.S. Amateur. They made some changes there. B, the club actually wanted them back. People may not remember that there was a contract with the Country Club and the PGA of America to have a Ryder Cup and a PGA Championship. Well, after the Country Club had the Ryder Cup in 1999, they decided to inform the PGA Championship that they were declining the PGA Championship to the PGA of America, which did not make them very happy. They had to get out of their contract. The Country Club will be interesting. Will be interesting to see how it holds up. I think it'll hold up well. It'll be similar to a Marion. But going back to the Boston area, I think it's going to be great. But I don't know if you or I will be covering golf in 2022, Bobby.
Hey, the only thing I hope to be covering, not to be covering in 2022, is landscape, if you catch my drift. Anyway, I'm just happy to see every year now that the USGA comes out with where they're going to play. If I don't see the name Chambers Bay, I just take a big sigh of relief. But I'd be willing to bet a lot of money 2025 will be back to Chambers Bay.
Well, I want to talk about 2023 because hasn't been a U.S. Open there at LACC. And it's a tremendous golf course. There is no question how good it is. Gil Hands has been in there and made some changes, and will make some other changes before they bring the U.S. Open there. There's going to be a Walker Cup there in a couple of years as well. What I think is difficult to understand and almost tragic in some ways is that Diana Murphy, who's the vice president of the USGA, made a comment when they named LACC. I saw it in a story where she said, basically, Riviera can't handle a major championship. Now, Riviera had the PGA Championship in the 90s, where Steve Elkington won. And the reason the PGA of America did not go back, and I think the reason why the USGA won't go back, is because they had a problem not with infrastructure, they had a problem with selling tickets. Now, you know, the fact that the PGA of America did a bad job selling tickets to a major championship is not uncommon. Los Angeles is a tough market. But the bottom line is to say that Riviera can't hold a major championship and doesn't have the infrastructure is ridiculous in so many ways, considering that Riviera is not that much further away from where LACC is. They can use all the same, a lot of the same facilities. I think they're going to park a lot of the people for LACC. They're going to park them at the UCLA. There's a lot of things that they can do. We already have a PGA Tour event on an annual basis, a successful, by the way, PGA Tour event at Riviera. And I think to a man, if you asked a player how hard Riviera would play in a summer versus a winter when the Kikuyu grass is up, that rough is tremendously difficult when you have the summer months. I just think that golf course would play so, so good. Exactly what Mike Davis would be looking for without having to make any structural changes at all. So Diana Murphy to make a comment like that, I think is absurd at best.
Well, you know, one thing, Alex, to say that Riviera can't host a major championship is almost like saying you can't go to Mass if you're at the Vatican. I mean, Riviera has stood the test of time. It is a fantastic venue, and certainly by anybody's standards, it qualifies to hold whatever major championship you want to hold there. I happen to love Riviera, but a majority of the players, as you alluded to, Alex, feel the same way. It is a fantastic golf course. Obviously, Ben Hogan loved the place, and to say that a golf course that Ben Hogan loved can't hold a major championship, little bit strange on that. What about, you've been on top of this story too, Alex, in our news and notes. Sangmun Bae apparently lost a further appeal. Looks like he's going to have to serve 2 years in the military in Korea. Any further developments from your viewpoint?
Well, he did lose an appeal. He does have one other appeal if he wanted to pursue it. But according to his people, he has decided even before this, that if he didn't win at this level, he was not going to appeal. He was going to go ahead and go back to Korea and do his military service, which I understand would probably be more like 21 months versus 2 years, but it's still up in the air. He's still trying to work through what he needs to do to get everything, the ducks in a row. He wants to finish his season, the 2015 season on the PGA Tour. He's also hoping that he'll get on the President's Cup team. But after that, he's going to go ahead and perform his military service. Now, the tour, at the same time, is having a meeting on Tuesday, a board meeting, where they're going to I believe they're going to be making a change to their rules that would allow Sangmun Bae or any other player that has to do military service, when they return to the PGA Tour, they will return with the status they had when they left, which would mean that if he had a year left on the PGA Tour, he would still have his year left when he returned from military service. Now, that'll get a pass probably tomorrow, when they're meeting, the board meeting at Quicken Loans, and then Sangmun Bae will basically not lose any status and will return to Korea sometime in the fall to start his military service.
Well, I certainly applaud the efforts of the PGA Tour. It just would be borderline criminal for somebody to go serve their country and be penalized for it in their standings in the world of professional golf. So good news, and hope that gets resolved this week. And congratulations, Sangmun Bae. 21 months, as Alex Pacelli said. Probably come back bigger, stronger, and better than ever.
One last thing, Bob, and most people aren't really following this yet, but there's the caddy lawsuit between the PGA Tour and the caddy group, the large caddy group out there. The tour was trying to move the venue of the suit from California to Florida, hoping that they would have a more understanding court system in Florida. And it turned out that the court ruled against the change of venue motion by the PGA Tour. The next step in this process will be a motion to dismiss by the PGA Tour. If they can't get this lawsuit dismissed, then we will start looking at the process, which will be a lengthy process of a trial between the caddies and the PGA Tour.
An opportunity to go out to dinner at St. Andrews with a caddy on the PGA Tour. Will not mention his name, but amongst their caddy ranks, they felt very secure that if they could maintain the jurisdiction in the state of California, that their chances of prevailing in this case were excellent. So we'll have to wait and see how that all shakes out.
You're listening to The Grill Room, powered by GolfBlot.com, heard on TuneIn Radio and the Armed Forces Radio Network. We'll be back with what's next on the schedule.
You're listening to The Grill Room.
I'd like to welcome some of the most important people in golf to The Grill Room. Golf course superintendents. Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many that now offer natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Jordan Spieth agrees.
If you love golf like I do, you'll thank your golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Welcome back to The Grill Room. Your table's ready. Now here's Bob Bubka and Alex Maselli.
Okay, Alex told us what's next on the schedule. So let's begin, Alex, with the LPGA Tour.
Well, Bob, the RICO's British Women's Open Championship. You know, you remember Mo Martin, I'm going to say the diminutive Mo Martin winning last year. This year it's played at Trump Turnberry Resort, Turnberry, Scotland. I think the most interesting part of this, outside of the fact that it's a women's major, is if Donald Trump will come off of the campaign trail to make it out there to Turnberry. Usually at an event like this at one of his courses, he does make the trip. It'll be interesting to see if he does.
It's pretty interesting to watch as he pursues presidency of the United States. Every time you think that he's going to be losing traction, he seems to be gaining in popularity. I don't know if candidate to be named later or Donald Trump, who would win in that election. Let's move on, though. We're not politics. We're golf here in The Grill Room. Web.com Tour, your Utah Championship, presented by Zions Bank and hosted by the Utah Sports Commission. New venue for 2015. Going to be played at the golf club at Thanksgiving Point, just outside of Salt Lake City. It's a Johnny Miller's signature golf club, and reports I get, it is a pretty nifty track.
Thanksgiving Point. Who comes up with those names?
Probably some turkey. Anyway, let's move on to the PGA Tour. Quicken Loans National.
I'm sorry, that was a joke, wasn't it?
No, you didn't laugh. It wasn't too funny.
No, nor did anyone else listening.
Anyway, Tigers Tournament can be played in Washington, D.C. area as the Grill Room is heard on Armed Forces Radio. We'd like all of our military friends to know that if you want to go to Tigers Tournament, just log on to TigerWoodsFoundation.org website and select the Tickets tab, where you'll find all the military ticket programs available. The event raises funds and awareness for Tiger Woods Foundation while paying tribute to our armed forces. Justin Rose, our defending champion, Ricky Fowler also in the field.
Also that guy Tiger.
Yeah, I think Tiger probably going to come out on top this time.
Wait, no, please don't. I mean, people are laughing now. Don't do that. In fact, they're not laughing anymore. They're actually sympathetic to your plight, which obviously is I don't know what it is. It's a problem. I don't know if it's you need medicine or what to think in some way, shape, or form that Tiger Woods, who, by the way, is now 266 in the world. I want to make sure we understand that. He started the year, Bobby, 32nd in the world. He is now 266. I just want to give you just a quick update because I know you've been wondering. He is just below Robert Rock, who is 373 in the world when the season started, is now 265. But I find even more curious is that Steve Wheatcroft, who was playing on the web.com tour last year as a member at 489 in the world, is now 262. If I had to bet using numbers, Steve Wheatcroft would be the favorite in a match against Tiger Woods. That is interesting. How can you say that Tiger will come out on top this time?
Well, it's his event, and he's got a little surprise for his many fans. By the way, it's going to be played at the Robert Trent Jones Club in Lake Manassas, Virginia.
32 in the world to 266. That's it for this week. You're listening to The Grill Room, heard on TuneIn and the Armed Forces Radio Network, powered by GolfBlot.com. By the way, The Grill Room is also available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Audio Boom, and of course, our website, thegrillroom.com.
A big thank you to our partners, the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America, and to Ion Loop and thegolfblot.com. So for Janice Self, Alex, Bowtie, Maselli, and myself, Bob Bubka, a thank you for being part of our Grill Room family. Please follow us on Twitter at TGRGolf and on Facebook at the Grill Room Golf Show.
Thanks for spending some time in the Grill Room. No need to leave a tip. Just come back again next week. The Grill Room.